The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to this episode of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm Jimbo, your host, and something kind of interesting happened today, and I thought it would make for a good podcast, and I would actually like to go back and look and see if I actually posted this podcast before with different answers, but it popped up on my Facebook memories feed, I guess, and it said, on this day 6 years ago, this is what I had posted. So I posted that I was doing a question and answer podcast with my wife interviewing me, and I asked for your guys' comments or your guys' question. I said, anything goes, family, business, personal life, even questions for my wife, and you'll get a shout out. So thanks for, actually ended up with 34 comments 6 years ago. So that's pretty good. And I thought, man, 6 years have passed since I did this. We're coming up on, let's see, we're coming up on 8 years of doing the podcast. So I'd already been in the podcast a couple years. And so I thought I have so much more knowledge about detailing, about running a business, about running multiple businesses, and just, you know, working with other brands and brand deals and podcasts and speaking with other people and just all kinds of different information. Obviously, I think that's a fair thing to say about most people is that you have more knowledge today than you did 6 years ago, at least hopefully. And so I thought it would be fun to go back through these questions and kind of give you my answers to them 6 years later. And that's what I talked about at the top of the podcast. I think it'd be kind of fun to go back and listen to this. If you are interested in that, I posted this around March 10th, 2016. So if you're looking to compare, you know, my answers from before and after, you could go back to around that date and look for a podcast. It's probably titled something like Q&A with my wife. In fact, let me pause this and I'll see if I can find it. Okay, so I did some digging and turns out there's a lot of Q&A shows and podcasts. So on April 11th, so it would have been a month after, which is probably the right time. Episode 227, Jimbo Answers Your Listener Submitted Questions, if you're curious to go back and listen to those questions. But for today, we will be answering the same questions, but probably vastly different and maybe some the same. So Angel Gomez says, how do we deal with water restrictions in California? Where do mobile detailers get their water from? So water restrictions in California are very confusing. Even still, I personally think the heat is off of us and has been off of us for a little while now. 2016, it was very hot and heavy. A lot of misinformation, a lot of bad information. Guys are buying tarps, reclaiming their water, just, you know, spending a bunch of money and time on worrying about water. In my personal experience, it's not as big of a deal anymore. And honestly, when these code enforcement officers come out, they, at least in my experience, don't have a lot of good information. They don't really know the law. So my suggestion is learn the law in the city that you're working in. A lot of times if you're on private property, there's nothing they could do about it. And also the second thing that I like to do is try to hide out. So don't be in visible spots. You know, I used to be stupid and wash cars on a main street, literally main street in Seal Beach. Really visible, probably not the best thing to do. Probably not the smartest idea. Don't do that. Do it in the back alley. So just hide out a little bit more if you're mobile. If you're a shop and you have to worry about this stuff, maybe consider washing inside the shop. Maybe, you know, try to figure out a spot close by that you could do it. Maybe behind a gate, ideally. And just kind of, you know, between those things, you'll be fine. Where do mobile detailers get their water from? Usually a detail supply store has a coin-op machine. I personally rent my tanks even still. Paul Frasco, friend of the show, Paul, 6 years ago said, do you skateboard or have you? I did skateboard when I was younger and I can still ollie. So how about that? Marcelo Mills, he was my banker for a long time. He said, hey, I'm curious about these air purifiers and ionizers. Do they work? If so, is there anything to look to determine the best one? I'm trying to keep that good smell in my car. Yes, ionizers, deodorizers, ozone machines, those definitely work. I personally don't like the smell of ozone. If you're looking at just little ozone things, they even have like plug-in ones that you can run in your car, and some USB RAN and stuff. But they, ozone O3 actually does work really well. And if you're looking to remove like odors out of cars, which could be a phenomenal side gig, I do it often. A bigger machine. I think there's a weird website like Ozone Generator 3000. Let's see. I'm going to Google that as I look. There was a, maybe it's like Ozone Generator 30,000 or something like that. There was, you can just look, and basically you want a high output machine that you don't have to run for a long period of time. But there's a ton of ozone machines, and yeah, I'm trying to pull it up as I talk, and I can't find the one I actually have. It's very homegrown, very ghetto, but it does the job, and I spent about $600 on it. So, but I've had it for years, and it works incredibly well. Joe Fernandez, friend of the show, also past guest of the show, says boxers or briefs. I prefer trunks. No, but I prefer both, boxer briefs. Chris Woolman, friend of the show, Rennie Doyle's hitman, said, I would like to hear more about how a small detail business owners handle the hiring and or contracting of employees, especially here in the state of California. So in the state of California, very tricky to hire 1099 contract employees. I would say consult with your CPA or consult with an HR person on that would probably be your best bet. But honestly, for I sub work out all the time to other detailers, and mainly that is just, me passing the work to them, and usually they give me a little stiff on the back end. I have worked side by side with detailers, and I break them off a piece. I've hired video guys, and I 1099 them. And it from what I understand, and don't take this as gospel, again, contact probably an HR specialist and your CPA, but as long as you don't really tell someone like when and where they have to be, there's some gray area in there. So, but I hire detailers all the time, and yeah. Miller Lite or Bud Light? Scott Schlute asks. LaCroix? Neither. I don't like beer. Philip Crow. If you could modify one car, build it up to anything you like, what car would it be, and what would you do with it? That's a hard one. I probably should have reread these before. I don't know. Actually, I do know. I think it would be an electric truck because I like the drive in an electric car. I like the regenerative braking. I like the instant torque. I think there's a lot of cool things about a car. An electric car other than like saving the environment, which I think is good and sure, whatever, but it's not the main feature of the car. I think we saw that really evident in the early 2000s when Honda tried to come out with these like hybrid electric cars and they were freaking really ugly. And they tried to make them space age and no one bought them and they didn't sell and, no, they, you know, they didn't adapt at all. And really, I think the first adaptation to a hybrid or electric car was, I guess you could argue the Roadster by Tesla, but more to the general consumer was the Toyota Prius, right? And it was the first car that sure got great gas mileage, was a hybrid, saving the environment, whatever, but actually was like half decent looking and like the general consumer could get behind it. And it was actually looked like a car. And so I think the ideal car for me is like, I would love if my Land Cruiser was electric for no other reason than I think it's cool that you can go really, really fast. I think it's so funny to me. So my wife drives a Tesla and it's so funny to me that this like Hellcat will come, you know, screaming by super loud, making a bunch of noise, and it looks like it's in slow motion. Meanwhile, I could be driving my, you know, my wife's car with loaded with kids and the dog and smoke that thing. So I think that's, I think that is my ideal car would be something like that. David Deere asks, least favorite thing to clean on a car? The engine. I mean, I just don't like it. It's usually works good for a before and after. I would say engines and rims and tires are my least favorite. I also really hate polishing a car too, but that's a whole nother thing. So, my favorite part of washing a car, I think like interior door panels or leather seats that are just thrashed, I think those are just really good for like before and after shots. Clients understand it. They could tell. It's very, usually the before and after is very dramatic. And so, I think it looks really, really cool. So, Rolando Vasquez asks, has your podcast helped you to build credibility by locking in new clients? 150,000%. I think it's helped me get more money per detail. It's definitely opened me up to the inside workings of the industry. It's given me access to brands. It's led to different income streams. Having a podcast has transformed my entire life. And funny enough, I really don't make any money directly from the podcast. In fact, I very, very rarely make money directly from this podcast, but the money that I've been able to make because of the podcast has been massive. Not the amount of money, but just the opportunities that have come my way because of having a podcast have been incredible. So it's not always about the money directly. And it is about kind of how that one thing, the role that one thing plays in the bigger circle of everything that I have going on. And a perfect example of that more recently was, I've really slimmed down the amount of cars that I actually work on down to about, you know, probably 2 to 3 a week. And at one time I had gone a couple weeks, maybe a month even, without doing anyone's car except for my own, because I was so busy and so wrapped up in COVID and blah, blah, blah. And so there was a time there that for a while I was just kind of doing my own stuff. I was testing products, consulting with brands, but I really wasn't interfacing with clients. And what I've more recently found out is, and the reason why I wasn't interfacing with clients is because I was making way more money doing other things and I didn't have to deal with stupid questions like, how much for a detail? And so I got really burnt out on that. And so I just wasn't doing it because I didn't need to do it. And so, and what I found out more recently, and something that I've been really working through, is that though I don't need to detail a car, I actually really friggin' like it. So what I do is, because all my SEO and, you know, my reviews and Yelp and Google My Business and all the stuff I talk about on the podcast, I actually do. And so my phone rings off the friggin' hook. And for a long time, I just, you know, was really, really cherry picking the details. And I continue to cherry pick, not as much as I did before, but I just cherry pick the cream of the crop details, charge a lot for them, make great money, do it at my shop. I have a car in right now. But what I learned is that though I may not be getting $1,000, you know, for every car 3 times a week, sometimes I get $1,500 every couple weeks for a car. Or, you know, I could patch together a probably, you know, a pretty decent side gig salary detailing cars that is supplemental. But more importantly, it's kind of like the podcast. More importantly, I get to catch up on my podcast. I get to kind of, it really is my therapy, right? And then I have a slew of cars that I test the products on. If I'm consulting for a brand, I do that. And it kind of feeds the whole ecosystem that I have, gives me ideas for podcasts. And so I think that's important and a good thing to kind of keep in check if you're kind of like me and I was really burnt out on dealing with customers, is that what is that actually feeding? So if you're just doing it for dollars and a transaction, that's one thing and that's totally fine. And I did that for years and years and years, but I always got burnt out doing that because of it. It's just repetitive and just gets old, right? It's like starting the cycle over and over again. But what I realized is, like, check this out. I can get paid for a detail, right? Say it's a $500 detail, which is kind of what I shoot for, my minimum, like $400 to $500. That's pretty much my minimum, and then goes up from there, right? So actually, if you could do a $500 detail every day, 5 days, right? 5 times 5 is $2,500. It's actually 10 grand a month, right? Which is, for a lot of people, a really bitchin' salary. And so, and that's what I started to look at too, of like, and that's 10 grand a month, and that's only one car a day. Like, that's not a big deal. I'm used to doing 10 cars a day. Obviously, not details, but, you know, back when I started doing 10 or 12 cars a day was the norm. Now, all I got to do is do one and kind of cream of the crop, so the car is actually pretty clean when I get it, and maybe it's taking me 4 or 5 hours. Like, not a big deal, right? I could start later in the day, so I have my morning. And this is exactly what I do, and this is a great point because it's given me content to talk about in my podcast. But it's like, cool, I don't start details till 10, right? And then I usually finish those details up by about 3 or 4. So if I need to, and in that 10 to 3 or 4, that 6-hour, 5 or 6-hour window, I'm testing products, I'm using products, I'm actually doing the detail for the customer, and I'm getting paid for that time. But then I'm also able to do all these other things, record a podcast maybe, or give me content ideas for podcasts. Or I just listened to Mr. Beast on Joe Rogan, and you talk about, you know, it spurred a bunch of things. Or that's when I get to listen to my audiobook or whatever. And then, you know, from basically 7 to 10 a.m. is when I work on my other businesses or my other things or my other side hustles or my other projects that I have in the works, which I feel like I always have a project in the works. And then same thing for after 3 or 4 o'clock. You know, sometimes it's family time. Most of the time it's family time, you know, between my daughter doing horse, my son doing football, blah, blah, blah. Family time until about 8. Then it's me and my wife time. Or sometimes I work on my side hustle at night too, because I actually really enjoy all this friggin' crap that I do. And it's all centered around detailing. So I realized that when I took a big portion of that away, the detailing my car, detailing a customer's car, that I lost a lot of the other things that I also like. I love making deals. And, you know, it's almost like a drug to me. I'm not a drug person at all. But selling a detail and closing a sale is so much fun to me. The bummer part is actually doing the detail. And that's why I have to incorporate all these other things that I do. And maybe I'm rambling at this point, but you get the idea of sometimes it, one thing you're doing that seemingly doesn't directly make money is actually indirectly making you money and feeding the bigger circle. So be careful with that. So yes, the podcast directly doesn't make money. I'm not making money as I do this. Indirectly, it's made me hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So yes, I would highly suggest doing a podcast and then doing it for a really, really long time. And then coming up on my 8th year, I'm really excited and motivated to get to that 10-year mark, because I think something really special happens at the 10-year mark of anything. It was transformational, my 10 years in detailing. That's when I finally got my shop. Things really started rolling on the detailing side, opened up a ton of opportunities. So can't wait to see what the 10-year mark looks like for the podcast. So let's see. David Deere says, are black cars worth the hassle? I think my next car will be gray. I love charcoal gray. That's my favorite color car. I think you can get a lot of the benefits of the black car without the hassle. I will say, so my father-in-law loves black cars. I tell him not to get them all the time because he also likes to rub on his cars too. I will say, I think if you're going to have a black car, the best thing you could do is do a full PPF. That's it. Like, I think if you're going to go black, you do a full, you just know it going in, and you're going to do a full, just a full PPF self-healing clear coat or clear bra on the whole entire car. If you have that detailer's eye, if you don't, get a black car, wipe it down with a dirty microfiber. I don't really care. But if you're a detailer and you have that keen eye, just wrap the whole thing. All right, Rolando again says another one. What came first, the detailer or the hack? That's a good question. I'm going to say the hack because, look, at the end of the day, everyone's just trying to make money. And so the hack came first because they saw an opportunity. Like, that's what I think, right? So when cars were coming out, painting cars or whatever, someone thought of the idea of like, hey, I can make that paint shinier. I can make that, you know, paint job last longer or whatever. And they probably hacked their way through it. So let's see. Eric Stedman says, what are a few tricks you first used when you started out to approach a potential client or even a business park setting? He said he's struggling with trying to figure out what exactly to do, to say or do. So a couple things worked really well, especially for the office park setting. Know someone there is your best way in. So that's exactly how I started. My mom had a friend at the time that worked at this office park, and I went and did her car, and she told a couple friends around the water cooler that I was coming. Especially by now, I know some is 6 years old at this point, but especially by now, at least where I live, there's always a car washer in the parking lot. And so people are very, very familiar with that. But so if you know someone, that helps you get in the door. Number two is having a menu. So that's something that I don't really talk about that often anymore because I don't really use a menu anymore. But having a menu, and if you're mobile, specifically a menu that people can come up and look at. So when I had a trailer, there was actually a menu on the inside of the trailer. So when my doors were open on the trailer, people could come up and read the menu. And so that was one thing that worked really well. Now I would probably have some sort of QR code that people could scan. And that way it's a digital menu that you could change the pricing. It's going to be a lot less expensive to do that. You don't have to get it printed or anything. And you can change the pricing when you want. And you can also add an option to like book an appointment. So I would probably mess now. I'd probably mess with something with a QR code. But yeah. All right. Let's see. Darren Windsor, haven't talked to him in a while. He said, if you were to start again, what would you do differently and why? And why would these changes benefit you today? So hands down, the number one thing I would do today if I was starting again right now is the most important thing that I didn't do that I would have done better is keep track of clients' information. It's like my biggest downfall was not keeping track of clients' information and honestly made me go into some really, really tough times because I never had a database that I could pull from. So, and then when people would call, I didn't know what I charged them last time. It was very confusing. And to my, you know, honestly, to my credit, I don't know, it was very difficult to do. There wasn't CRMs all over the place, but I definitely could have used QuickBooks Online and would have saved myself a ton of hassle. So that's hands down the first thing I would do is just make sure you're keeping track of your client information. And something like House Call Pro, you could go to housecallpro.com/ADP. That is going to help you to keep track of not only your client's information, you could take pictures. I mean, it's so much better than it was when I started in 2008, but that's something I would do. Also, I would have started Google Ads a lot sooner and really harness the power of the internet a lot sooner than I did. I mean, for you guys listening, I didn't put anything on the internet until 2014. I mean, that seems like yesterday to me. I know it's almost 8 years ago, but it seems so late into the internet game. And so that's what I would have done too, is really try to harness the internet. I mean, shoot, I joined YouTube in 2006. October 2006 is when I joined YouTube and didn't put my first video up there until like, I don't know, 2017 or 18 or something. And I just would be a lot less of a consumer and more of a content producer and really try to harness the early days of the internet. I think I could have gone a lot further. Let's see. Anthony Campanel. Have you hired any employees and your reasoning behind your decision? Remember a while back on your podcast, we were talking about possibly not hiring and how Darren Priest went from employees to no employees. I think it's a tough decision for a lot of us that are also solo that would like to grow or have help, which is very difficult. I mean, I've had a few people now. What I like doing the best is two things. One, kind of what I'm doing right now is just like a much higher end kind of curated detail, one a day, knock it out, make good money. That's not sustainable forever, I don't think. And there's a lot of other areas of my life that doesn't work. I like location freedom, time freedom. And so that being locked into a detail every day doesn't work for that. But there's also something to having a cash flowing business that if you have a game plan to utilize that cash in other arenas, that it is could be very beneficial. So that's basically what I'm doing right now is that I have my detailing business as a cash flowing business to produce cash that then I'm then deploying into other areas, basically not retirement plans, but basically things that don't require my time or don't require me to be there. And eventually those will take over for my income. But for the time being, I just need a cash flowing business while I'm young and healthy and whatever to be able to buy those other assets that will take care of me when I don't want to work anymore and I can work wherever. And again, like I just talked about before, like, kind of, I have other things going on that I do as I'm doing these cars as well. So I am kind of double dipping in a way. So hiring an employee, it really just comes down to what do you want? Like, to be honest with you, I never wanted a ton of employees. I really didn't. I always saw them as a problem. And so for me personally, just the businesses I'm growing, I don't like employees. I try to, I tried to not have employees. I tried to scale with systems, processes, and technology, and not with people. So I know maybe that sounds bad, but again, I do have 1099 people that I work with. But as far as like full-time employees working for my company, I don't have any. It's me and my wife, and it's saved us a lot of money. It's probably cost us a lot of money, to be honest. I think opportunity costs are really, you know, can be really high, and that's something that we need to like be vigilant of, because having employees frees you up. It does. It frees up your time. It makes it so you can make more money. I think the detailing industry is very tricky to hire employees. And I think it really only works if you have a shop, to be honest. But I don't have a ton of experience there because that's not what I wanted my detailing business to be. I never wanted to have a full crew. I never wanted to do that. And I think it's interesting we're seeing with the car wash industry of them going from like full service to self-serve and basically just butchering their workforce. I mean, going from probably 50 employees working at a local corner car wash full service to a tunnel where there's like probably 3 people working and they're just there making sure like a car doesn't crash in the tunnel, right? So I think it's very interesting. And I look to other industries like that and say, okay, what does this look like long-term for these people? What are they doing? What are different industries doing? And then how can I implement that into my business? And for me, it's always been like a software is much cheaper than an employee and a software I can cancel at any time. So if I can implement different softwares into my business and automations into my business, then I can kind of, you know, make my runway that much longer before I have to hire an employee. And so I've always tried to do that. And again, housecallpro.com/ADP is a way that I can kind of keep track of everything. And then again, I sync it with my QuickBooks and kind of blah, 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 blah. So Scott Meyer says, do you have an accountant and or tax professional, or do you do it yourself? And do you use any particular software? And back then I was recommending the Better Software Company. Man, remember there? They were good too, the Better Software Company, but they got janky towards the end, which House Call Pro hasn't. So that's why I switched over, but the Better Software, yeah. Yes, and this is an area of my life that I absolutely splurged, and it's been completely worth it. So I have splurged on an accountant and a tax professional. So, like, splurged in a big way on these people because I was doing it myself, and I was just using QuickBooks, and that is fine. If your things in your life is really simple, it works perfectly. You don't need to do that. My life got very complicated because I had multiple streams of income. I had multiple things coming in, ton of expenses going out, and it was all over the place, and it just became a cluster. And so I brought in a professional to just handle that. So every month I pay them, and they just handle my books. When tax time comes around, it's super simple. And that's what happened is, like, my wife and I wanted to buy a house, and our books were a mess, and our taxes were a mess. And everything was a mess. And it really led to some big opportunity costs and some real heartache down the line. And so that was when we ponied up and got a really good tax person, a good CPA. And they also do our monthly books and our taxes. And everything's been really, really smooth with all that. So I highly suggest that you invest in a high-level CPA, in a high-level tax professional, because a high-level great CPA and bookkeeper will more than pay for themselves. So if it costs $5,000 to hire a CPA, if they're not making you $15,000 back, that's not a good high-level CPA. So literally our tax guy, just with some strategies that he has. And again, that's goes back into the why I kind of dove back deeper into detailing, is at the suggestion, I guess, of our CPA of like, hey, make sure you don't like stop the bleeding for your cash flow businesses, because your cash flow businesses are going to pay for those investments that we need that are then going to offset your taxes. And also you're going to be able to reap the benefits of those things later. Basically what we're talking about is real estate. So rolling money into real estate that you can leverage in a whole host of different ways. And that's kind of been my focus as of lately, mine and my wife's. That's kind of our end game plan. Outside of detailing is real estate. So real estate until the day we die. So someone asked, are you process driven or results driven? And which one should you be at? Which one should be at the most importance for maximum profitability? This is super easy. Results. I mean, it's both. So the end goal is results, and you have to deliver on results for maximum profitability from your clients. You have to deliver on what your clients want. I mean, you have to, right? But the process gets you to the results. So without the process, you don't have the results. So it's both. You have to be results driven, but then back. So if you start with the result that you want first and then back into that with a good process, bada bing, bada boom. Grant Hawtrey asks, how do you stuff a Thanksgiving turkey? And I have no idea how you stuff a Thanksgiving turkey. I really do want a deep fried turkey though. Maybe on the list this year. And what's your personal procedures when doing a full car start to finish? Wash clay, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I'll get into that on a different episode. Yeah, basically, I usually will start with the outside, wash clay, let it drip dry, move it into my shop, work on the interior while it drips dry, and then do the interior, and then that dries as I finish up the exterior. I mean, that's the quickest way I can go about it, and that's why I love having a shop, because I kind of mix both. I don't do the full exterior and then start on the interior. I'm constantly doing a mixture of both. All right, Chris Wentworth said, how do you handle admin stuff, networking, flying out of state for correction coding jobs, events, client relationship building, phone calls, texts, Facebook messages, Instagram DMs, emails, nurturing potential new clients, follow-up, blah, 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 and still prove through actions to your wife that you're able to be the best father, husband you can be. And so boundaries, man. Like, boundaries are the best advice I can give you. So how do I handle my admin stuff, my networking, client relationship building, phone calls, texts, Facebook messages? Here's what I've also realized about myself. Like, I love business. Sales and business is like what I love. And so detailing is the business that I operate, but I really love business over detailing. And so I'll be honest with you, I'm not the best at this, but like, I just love it. And so I do it all the time. Like, I'm constantly on my phone, but I really have tried to set boundaries with like I talked about earlier, like, I don't start a detail anymore until 10 o'clock. Like, the first, if you call me, the first appointment I have is 10 a.m. Why? Because I take my kids to school and that's not done till 8. Right. And then sometimes after that, I want to get a workout in. Yeah, do I try to work out before I take my kids to school? Yeah, but sometimes I'm up late the night before because I date night, taking care of the wife. We do date night every week. And so sometimes I'm up late because we had date night, so we didn't get home till 10 or 11. And so I don't want to get up at, you know, 5 to go work out. So I work out at 8 after I take the kids to school. And so that's worked for me. And again, I have multiple streams of income, and so I'm able to do one car a day. And I just laid out how you could do one car a day and actually make a really good living, but setting boundaries and setting proper expectations. So like, the boundary is of like, I don't have a detail until 10, right? Now I do have other meetings before 10, but my detail starts at 10. That's just a boundary line. Another boundary line that I've had forever is I'm done working at 4. Like, I am done with a detail out of the shop by 4 o'clock. Now, after 4 o'clock, am I on my phone answering calls, answering emails, talking to people? 100%. Like, I never stop, and I never stop thinking either. I never stop thinking of a new content idea. I never stop thinking about, and that's like, I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you a little secret. Like, that's my workaround of even when I'm not on my phone, even when I'm not talking to a client, like, my brain personally is always thinking about strategy, and I'm always dissecting other companies, other brands, other people, other interactions. And so though I'm, you know, fully engaged with my son when he has flag football on Wednesdays at 4:30, right? That's why I stop at 4. It's like, well, he's got flag football. It's like, oh, my daughter does horse twice a week. Like, life happens, and I'm not going to miss my kids growing up. It's just, I'll live in a cardboard box before I give up on that, right? And so I've set those boundaries of times I end my physical working day, but I'm always thinking, I'm always scheming, I'm always got a content idea, always. I'm always responding. But I tell my younger sisters, I tell my wife, I tell everyone, like, you know, when they ask, like, I just need more hours in the day. It's like, yeah, but get up earlier. Like, and that's what I do. If you wake up at 5 o'clock, you can get a crap done. You can get a crap more done, right? Or if you're a night owl, stay up till midnight. Stay up till 1 a.m. Like, you can still, here's the weird thing. For me, if I stay up till midnight, there's no way I'm getting up at 5 a.m. But if I stay up till 1 a.m., I could get up at probably 6, right? So if I stay up later, I could still wake up relatively early. So, like, sometimes you do that. Like, I started this podcast doing it at night, you know? And so it's always a balance and it's always changing. Flying out of state for correction and coding jobs or events, I do this often. I just got back, so I'm recording this on a Thursday. Monday and Tuesday of this week, I was in Vegas for a trade show, doing some demos for Turtle Wax. And so guess who came with me? My wife. And we got a date night out of it, and it was great, right? Flew in a day early for the trade show to get ready. So we flew out Monday. Vegas is a quick flight. We had all day Monday in Vegas to ourselves to do whatever the heck we wanted. And then Tuesday, I worked all day at the show, you know? And guess what I was doing Monday? I was responding to people. I was calling them, blah, blah, blah. Worked a trade show all day Tuesday. Flew out late Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning I had a detail at my shop at 10 a.m. because I took my kids to school and got a workout in and then had a detail at 10. So, yeah, going out of state traveling is like the most fun thing ever. I love it, and I always bring my family. So usually I bring the kids too, but Vegas is not a place for kids. So I, yeah, that's why me and my wife just went. So always, always, always going, always scheming, always trying to do that. All right, last one. When should I use a harder foam pad with a polish and when a softer pad? When you're trying to get more correction. So when you're trying to remove more defects, get more correction, you're going to want to use a stiffer foam pad and then a softer pad when you're trying to finish out. And that is Alexander Greb. So yeah, with that, that was super fun, actually. Hopefully that wasn't super boring for you guys. Haven't done a longer solo podcast like this in a while, but yeah, that was super fun. So hope you guys enjoyed that. Hopefully it'd be very interesting to go back and forth and check out those, you know, those answers to those questions before. But hopefully you guys enjoyed that one, and I will catch you guys on the next episode. Thanks for all these years of listening. Can't wait for the 10-year mark. So a couple years to go, but appreciate you guys listening. Catch you on the next one. See ya.